Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we started the first segment talking about the top 10 places that you want to go to eat things in the world.
Yes.
Which a bunch of them are pretty exotic. Anything left on your list?
I think
you got through about seven or so.
Yeah, there are some places in Central America that I would like to go. And I would really like to go to Mexico. I'd like to eat in the countryside in Mexico. I have a love for their cooking, for sure. And
you have a lot of talented cooks from Mexican origin.
And as I love those guys, I'd like to experience their culture firsthand. I don't know if this is how you pronounce it. You speak Spanish. Manaus, Brazil. Is it Manaus? Is that how you would say
that? I think it is Manaus, but they speak Portuguese.
Portuguese. There's a restaurant called Market there.
Portuguese. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So there's a, thank you, Tony. God, you keep me straight,
Cindy.
You?
Yeah, I sure try. Uh-huh.
And then in Pizac, Peru, there's, in both of those places, I want to go to the market. And in Santiago, Chile, I'd like to go to the market. But there are also a couple of restaurants that I'd like to go there, to there. So I'd really like to experience all of those.
You have a serious agenda.
I do. I know. I had so much fun looking
at
everything.
And a lot of ancient food, it sounds like, on your list.
Yeah, of course.
Food.
When
I start to make my list, I have a hard time leaving behind things that are like very close to my heart, that are comfort, that are, you know, like we talked about Vienna or Piemonte, in and around the Lange, and then also up further north near the lakes. That cooking is really
it's amazing.
At once country and sophisticated, and it's certainly a little rich for every day, but for a couple of days, and really the most interesting cheese in Italy for sure. So much of it is from up that way. No white truffles this year either.
So
I've not had a single white truffle this year. 2015 has to be better that way.
Okay, well, there you go. What towns in northern Italy are you talking about, or?
Near Gattinara, there are a couple of small restaurants up that way. There's several right in La Morra in the Brolo zone. There are some superb places to go, and that's the kind of thing that, and we can post on the Foreman and Wolf page on the WYPR website. Some of the restaurants and some of the places we're talking about, if they're specific ones, maybe we'll put up a top 10 list if we can get that done.
Okay.
And we did ask earlier on the program if you have things you want to add to your list. We're reviewing top 10 places we want to go to eat things, top 10 things we want to cook, top 10 things we want to drink. Those are, you know, we'd love to hear from listeners at foremanwolf@wypr.org if you want to email us. What hits your list for 2015?
So what are some of your top 10 things you want to cook this coming year?
It's funny. I have cooking regrets. I never quite cook as many things as often as I would like to during the course of the year.
And you're talking about at home.
I'm talking about at home. Sometimes at work, but talking about at home. And at home, it gets to be a little more therapeutic than purely executing something at work. You know, there's not one particular artistic aspiration at work that I have that I'm chasing, but the thing that I love to make is polenta with fresh ground meal with fresh corn when the corn's really good in season, and that with any kind of like a little fricassee of rabbit leg or something like that, or a little bit of spring garlic even, and just fresh butter is just amazing. And I've made that one time all summer, and that's just like the best foil for a simple piece of grilled fish or that crispy rabbit leg or what, you know, whatever it might be. I mean, escargot can be great with that. But that polenta, I can't believe I made it one time. Fried tomato skins, and I know it's funny. All the things that I want to cook, there's so many things that are like little stupid peasant snacky comfort things.
I love fried
things.
Tomato skins. You got me doing that. Definitely.
It's one of those things.
Well, talk about a great utilizer. I mean, if you're peeling your tomatoes, you have to get all the meat off of the skin, though, or they won't fry correctly.
No, they don't fry correctly.
It has to just be skin.
But that's just
you need
best,
a sharp knife.
That's the best snack, or like as a,
a
garnish for a little piece
that's
of beautiful
fish. It's a lot of work.
Fish.
And it takes a while to fry them perfectly, too, but they are so good. So fried tomato skins.
You know, for a caprese that you nail it, like that you make with really dark tomatoes, like purple, you know, purple Cherokee is a black crimson, a really good acid.
Yes.
And a fat slice of buffalo mozzarella, and then garnish with the oil, just the oil and the fried, salty fried tomato skins is just one of the best
that's
things.
That's fun.
I made no fried tomato skins this past year. Completely irresponsible.
You do have some regrets.
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
So now, what are you looking forward to cooking this year?
I have always wanted to make a terrine with sweetbreads, so I'm determined to actually do it. I love sweetbreads, and I just think that it would make a beautiful terrine. It's a very classic idea. And
there is that restaurant. It's funny. I've talked to you about it a couple of times, and I know you've been to Ma Cuisine in Bonn. And I know you've missed, you've not been in attendance there with me when I've had her foie gras sweetbread terrine, which is great.
Yeah, I would like to taste hers for sure.
And it's the thing that's so cool about that particular one is that the foie gras, like gently holds the poached sweetbread, you know.
Well, that's the thing. The sweetbread's not, you're going to have to cook them and leave them as they are. It's not just like you can puree or chop up sweetbreads.
When I talk to her, she
it's gonna purges have to be them solid pieces.
And she lightly poaches it,
yeah.
Very lightly poaches
sure,
it.
Sure.
And cools it all the way down for a day.
Sure.
And then
she
goes
probably presses them too.
Yeah, and she presses them and presses them in the mold with the foie gras.
Right.
But
yum.
Yeah, please make that. I'm ready for that.
Yeah, and I want to do a ballantine with goose. I have not worked with goose in a long time, and Julian made, I think he received some goose breasts last year around Christmas time. Oh my gosh, and I walked into his kitchen and he was making them, and I'm like, you have to give me a slice of that. That is, they're so good, and I think that would make a really beautiful ballantine.
Well, you have all that fat. I mean, the thing,
they're so fatty.
You can render some of that fat out and
so
season
good.
All the layers of the ballantine.
Right,
so.
Yeah, I think that would be really fun. And this may sound a little strange, but I've never worked with calf's brains. And that is something that, I think they're very, very good. And I would like to just make something with that, maybe a soup or something. And the other thing that I stay away from is tripe. And again, thanks
you
to...
You know I have a thing
I
for
know you do.
Both tripe and... Well, I like organ meats. And
right, right.
Yeah, the tripe, the best I've ever had has been at the Pretzov, up on the Dolomites. And that's... And it literally, it's almost like with... A tomato and white wine sauce that he poaches them in.
And is it soup-like, or is it more of an entree?
It's an entree-sized portion, but it's essentially a stew. It's stewed tripe with spring garlic, tomato, white wine, and bacon that they make on the farm there.
Well, and again, my guys in my kitchen have made it for Empoli Meal, and it has tomato in it. Really, really good. It was the first time I ever had tripe that I actually liked it.
It needs
so
the acid.
So I like the idea of the tomato product in and maybe making a soup or something.
When they
with
serve
tripe.
It there, they serve it with like crusty toasted brown bread and the fresh butter they make on the farm. And oh my
that's,
God.
That's pretty cool. And I think one more thing. We had a sauce that I will never forget in Italy when we were on the... We were at the winemaker's house where his mother cooked for us, and it was the last dish that we had, and she had used...
Alberto's mom.
Yeah, she had used all the, the kidneys and the livers and everything to make this reduction sauce, and oh my God.
It was as much of a spread as it was a sauce, because
you had
ground bones that went to the sieve in there, you had all kinds
of
stuff.
It almost looked like mole in a way.
Yeah,
it was Mexican mole. I mean, it was
medieval Italian mole is what it was.
And I really want to make that
with all parts of the animal, and it was thickened with the blood. And this is probably not what anyone else wants to cook this year coming up. But I'm very happy to come and eat it.
Yeah,
or work on it with you
with a game
that kind
bird
of thing
or
close to my
heart.
Like
squab or venison or something.
That was guinea fowl, and guinea fowl has such good flavor. That's one of my, if not my, very favorite bird. Because it has almost like a pork-like intensity, and the flavor of the skin is that way.
So those are some of the things that I'm thinking about. And you named a few, so should we talk about wine?
Things we want to drink. I mean, that's... And so do you have anything on your list that is not French red wine? That's my first question.
Darn, you had to say that. Yes, well, I had port.
You can name all the French red wine that you wanted.
I had port from 1964 this year on my, unfortunately, 50th birthday. We'll say that really quickly. And
happy birthday. We can sing it.
No,
this is a long
stop.
Segment.
Anyway, okay. So before I would like to have a port that's older than that. I would really like to taste some old ports.
Single greatest port I've ever had, 1948 vintage.
Ooh, okay.
There are two great 1948s. One is Taylor Fladgate,
all right,
which is the, I'm certain, the devil price-wise, and it is very much in its prime still.
Okay.
And 1948 Avery's, which no longer exists.
How do you spell that?
House. Just like you, not aviary, like a bunch of birds, where a bunch of birds live. But,
Avery's.
But Avery, like the name.
Okay.
And yeah, that's fantastic.
So 48. And the other thing, well, is French, sorry, but it's...
63 is a great vintage in port, too. So that's an easy one.
And then an old Sauternes. Again, you were talking about Mock Cuisine. We had a, was it 26 or 29?
1924.
24, okay. So we had a 1924 Sauternes at Mock Cuisine. Oh.
Yeah.
And again, it's just something I'll never forget. I mean, I can taste it right now. I can see it visually. I mean, it was such an amazing color.
The intensity of that wine.
The smell of the wine was so amazing. And I would just love to have that experience, to have something that's old like that again. Or, you know, from another year. But I don't know, are there other good years from the 20s or 30s?
Sauternes is the easiest wine to go find at auction in good condition and where the price is not escalated.
Okay.
Because dessert wines often do not, besides port, they don't seem to appreciate that much in price.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like people who collect wines or buy wines, they'll buy them because they understand this is to be excellent, but then it seems like they don't consume a lot of them, and then they auction them off. So there's always a bit of a glut on the market of mature Sauternes.
Okay, good.
The vintages don't run consistent with great Bordeaux vintages. So in the 60s and 50s, you find a decent amount of high-quality Sauternes. It gets trickier once you get back to the 20s and the 30s. But the best purchase, honestly... 1980 is a vintage, is a very forgotten vintage for a lot of things, and 80 is maturing really nicely, and the will for, you know, take you 2 decades worth of birthdays from now, no problem. But 1980 is a year to look for in
any
Sauternes.
Particular producer or just anybody, because it was such a good year?
No, I mean, that's the Clemens, Clemens,
mm-hmm.
and Coutet, Coutet, both make great wines. There's lots of others. Defargue, which is the second label from Chateau de Chem.
Okay.
That because of the cachet of de Chem, it sometimes rises a little bit in price. But the estate from 1924 that we had, Rabot-Pommier, their 80 was worthwhile. Their 71 is also a great Sauternes vintage that I think is relatively findable, and the wines almost all are in very good shape if you can find them.
You know, you were saying about French wine. The other thing I really would like, I think it's interesting what's happened with Veuve Clicquot over the years of drinking it. And I would love to do a vertical of a tasting of Veuve Clicquot over many different years, just to kind of understand how that wine has changed.
Well, some of the history of that house just reflects the history of Champagne and what's happened. That's a house that was bought by a very big luxury brand's house. And changed very much from the first time that you had that wine to becoming a gigantically high production wine. I mean, it was a much smaller production wine when you first had that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people who grew up with the idea that this was a coming up brand, this is something to know. There's momentum with that brand that maybe outstripped the quality of the brand, and certainly outstripped the quality evolution of the brand. But that's the question to me in Champagne is always, who is the next, you know, who is the person? Champagne is the most competitive, I would say, winemaking place in the world. It begins in the Franco-Prussian war and you have both Catholic and Protestant sentiments. And look at the names. Look at all the Germanic names there. You have a pretty big, you know, nationalistic competition historically, in many generations now, in that region of France. And when you see how people farm there, they are so precise, and every piece of ground is covered. Things are planted so close. I mean that, and the stakes are high because when you have something that hits, it hits like Clicquot to an unbelievable degree and becomes a luxury brand. And if it doesn't, it stays a sleepy little label. One of the cool things in Champagne, on my list of wines to drink and to continue to explore more of in 15, are many small Champagne houses. Like the winemaker we interviewed recently, Jean-Marc Selec, very high quality oriented, very determined, very connected to where he's growing, what he's growing. The opposite of the very big houses that produce enormous quantities of product. This is you know, handcrafted, farmed, and made in the cellar carefully. And maybe there are not 47 people chasing one thing. It becomes your connection to that. farmer. And it will never be the giant brand because this person is not trying to make the giant brand. This person is, and he's not trying to make one taste for the world. He's trying to make the taste of the place the way that he knows best, which is the way most of, I bet you, your French list of red wines have things like Chateau Rayas on there,
absolutely,
or Henri Bonneau, or,
absolutely,
or Chateau Latour, or, you know, things that are all about the place.
Yes.
And Champagne, I think, is going through a little bit of a revolution in Champagne. Historically has been very profitable because they managed to hedge their bets on vintage. Most of the wine is non-vintage. And on just knowing the house style, knowing the name. They built brands before brands were built. I mean, you know, 100 years before brands were really built in our culture. And so it's when you think about it, it's really like and that's from the competitiveness of what happened in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what's happening now is the people leaving that history behind a little bit and going back to the land and working in their own cellar. And you see, like, Juxalos became a big deal in changing what was going on. And Selec, I think, is another guy who's going to change what's going on. And we can talk about that more and more.
That's exciting.
Top 10 list when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine.